We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome to episode 265 of the Barcelona Podcast, brought to you by the Blue Wire Podcast Network. I'm Dave Hilton, and today I've got Levon, better known as Barcelev, with me again to answer some listener questions, better known as La Ronda. Levon, I don't think you've ever been in the torture chamber that is our listener questions from the closed Facebook group, but I think from your past experiences, I'd say you're pretty prepared and you're ready to go.
I love questions.
Yeah, I'm not
whether
worried.
Whether I have an answer or not, I love them.
That is true. Yeah, Levon, very much in a very Frances way, he feels the answer in his heart, and that's when it comes out.
That's not always a good thing, but yeah, it's true.
Well, let's start with an easy one. I think from Domingos, is Jandro Orellana or Nico the next defensive midfield player? And I think this one has it's so early still in the offseason, Levon, that I think there's some domino effects still left to go. I don't think we can really properly, I mean, you can answer the question, but I don't know if we can properly answer it until we know more about what the squad is going to look like next year.
First of all, I don't think that you know what a player will turn out like until he makes that jump to the first team. Watching youth players or young players do very well in Segunda B does not guarantee success. We have seen this with highly touted talents that have come through the system and have even had like hopeful first couple of seasons in our club. You know, think about Bojan Krikic, for example, or Mark Batra. Those guys were in the first team for a couple of seasons before, you know what, they're not good enough. Having said that, I do believe that Nico pretty much earned the defensive midfield spot under Pimienta, right? So if what we have seen last season is something that we need to go on, I would say that spot is Nico's to lose, or at least the competition between those two is Nico's to lose.
Oh, for sure. I mean, I think all reports are that Hunter will be, he was a Barca B captain already at the age of 20. He was the youngest of the four captains, and he'll probably be a captain. Well, most likely definitely be a captain next year for Barca B if he's still at the club. And then reportedly he will not be in preseason, that being Jandro, but Nico will be in the first team preseason to try to get himself some kind of playing time and put himself on the map. And we knew that it has come out that Koeman likes him. I think the bigger picture here, though, before you talk about Jandro or Nico next year and what role, I think we're, again, speaking about Nico Gonzalez, what role will he have in the first team? That is all constituted on the fact that Barca is clearly looking for another midfielder. I wrote something for Barca Blog yesterday or 2 days ago about this, about the fact that Wijnaldum, there was some truth to those rumors. Obviously, Barca wanted Wijnaldum for XYZ reasons. We've also heard now in the rumor mill, as always, Fabian Ruiz. This week, it was Donny van de Beek. And Steven Kuzner had asked, is van de Beek a legit possibility? Quickly answer that listener question. No, he isn't, because he still has, there's still money on his contract. There's still years on his contract. He signed for Manchester United last year. And so, no. But what those rumors do tell me is that Barca are looking for, they think that they're one midfielder short. And at this juncture, if they're not able to find that player, if Wijnaldum was their make it or break it player and they decide not to sign either on a midfielder, then Nico is a break glass in case of emergency type of player, just as Elash was last year when Pjanic wasn't working out. So I think it comes into whether or not Barcelona find that extra midfielder that I think clearly they're looking for in a certain type of profile. If they find him and they're getting him for either a free transfer or for a little bit of money, well, then Nico again goes down the depth chart and is probably in Barca B next year. But if not, that means he could get first team opportunities.
Yeah, I think Van der Beek could be an interesting fit, actually. So if they could work out some kind of trade deal and send, say, Pjanic to Manchester United.
Yeah, wouldn't that be nice?
Who might add something to that team. And De Beek to Barcelona, because for some mysterious reason, De Beek doesn't get any minutes there at all. His signing for Manchester United never made sense to me.
No, yeah, I agree.
Neither does it make sense that they don't play him at all, because he's too good of a player not to play at all. So who knows, like, something might happen. I do think that Koeman wants a more experienced midfielder in the mix that we have right now, rather than promote another youth guy besides Elix. And if the reports are true, Ricky Puig is also guaranteed more playing time next season, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, and I think we unfortunately are kind of throwing out Carlos Alenia, who is now reportedly potentially getting looked at by Granada. They have a new manager, Roberto Moreno. So we'll have to see. Again, we're not sure what the squad will look like. So guessing what the, eighth or ninth midfielder on the depth chart, who that will be, is difficult because you just don't know. And speaking of depth charts, Pard asked, Koeman really wants to use a left-footed center back. Does that make Lenglet's position untouchable?
Yeah, I think we touched on this last week. Mm-hmm. If Koeman plays three in the back, then you absolutely need a center back. Now, if Laporte joins us from Manchester City, then Longley is not untouchable. But if that competition is between Longley and anybody else, really, because I think even if Umtiti stays, he'll just be sent to the stands by presidential decree, then Longley's position in a three-man backline will be untouchable, because on the left, with three men in the back, you cannot play with a right-footed player. That is suicide. The angles don't work out. Those passes will be way too awkward. So, yeah, there you have it.
Yeah, the only thing I would add to that is the same thing with Aymeric Laporte, where just like Donny van de Beek, is a player of that profile possible for what Barcelona have to pay for what they have in their ledger? Not really. But if you do have a player that wants out and wants away, so Laporte himself did come on Twitter and shot down a rumor that it was associated, you know, Barca was associated with, you know, potentially with the agent, or there were talks or whatever. He shot that down. But what is true from all that statement is that Barcelona are clearly in the market, because he's not the first one to be linked with this. I mean, and De Ligt, oddly enough, is right-footed, not left-footed, but he does play on the left a lot. But as you said, they want a left-foot dominant center back. All that said, yeah, the truth is that with Lenglet questionable, with Umtiti certainly with one foot already out of the club, if the club can put both hands on his back and manage to push him the rest of the way out the door, that Barca want and need a left-footed center back. And even in the B team, as we've spoken about, Arnau Comas is probably the next man up. He is right-footed, and then Ramos Mingo is a left-footed center back, but he's also just 19 or just turned 20 and not ready yet. So it's not like they would throw him in the deep end in any instance. But the truth is that Barcelona want a left-footed center back. And the other thing I bring up, unlike a midfielder who's going to do all the things that Koeman might want him to do, like a Wijnaldum, like a Danny van de Beek, who can be offensive, can be defensive, just kind of shuttles the ball around. What's the market for left-footed center backs right now? I mean, how many are even available? And I think that's unlike the midfield position where they can kind of look to the final hour. The left-footed center back market for players who could potentially play for Barcelona who are going to be better than Clement Lenglet, that's a very, very, very short list.
Agreed. And also, even though Lenglet was extremely frustrating last season, that does not necessarily mean that he will be as poor next season.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that. It was rough. I mean, he made five individual mistakes that directly led to goals, which was most in the Liga. And the total that he'd made is an entire career so far. He'd never made five individual mistakes to lead to goals in the way that they're credited with that. It is kind of an archaic metric. But anyway, I mean, it's almost statistically, he is only 26 he turned. Happy birthday to him yesterday. But yeah, so 26 he turned yesterday. And yeah, for up to that point to have been so spotless, if you will, defensively. Now, as I mentioned before with Lenglet, I'd love if he moved the ball better. And I think Barcelona would like to play a certain way. So they want, he's not going to change the way he plays the ball on the ground and break lines. It's just not going to happen for him. But yeah, I mean, with left-footed center backs, if he bounced back to even 70% of what we know he's capable of, and those numbers as far as making mistakes are cut down, and Barca could do worse than having Lenglet next year.
Yeah. And even if it's for debt reasons, unless you get a really good offer for him, you probably want to keep him. The irony is that if you put Lenglet in a system where the defense can sit back a little bit more, then he becomes an extremely good defender. Mm-hmm. We saw that in the first season that he came where Ernesto Valverde played 4-4-2 and allowed the team to soak up the pressure on defense. And Lenglet was excellent. But for a more offensive style, he struggles a bit. He struggles with all the space behind him as well. But let's see what happens.
I mean, we even saw in El Clasico where Real Madrid's game plan was to force him into that channel for him to shoot. And just having a player to be able to shoot in that circumstance would be helpful. I mean, having a defensive midfielder to shoot in that position would have been helpful as well. But yeah, we're going to keep talking about defenders. I guess this is an easy one for you. Edwin asks you, Levan, who is Barca's best defender at the moment?
I mean, our best defender overall is probably Jordi Alba as a football player. Our best defender defensively is Araujo. It's just extremely impressive how he closes down space, how he recovers, how he owns his opponents in one-on-ones, how strong he is in the air. Our best defender on the ball might very well be Eric Garcia, who's coming in. On a good day, Piqué is still the best defender because he kind of combines a lot of things except speed. Our problem is that even our defenders who excel at something have other weaknesses. So Araujo is amazing defensively, but he's really not good on the ball. Eric Garcia is amazing on the ball, but he's really not strong in the air. My favorite defender last season was when Frenkie de Jong played in defense because he had it all. And I would have liked to see that continue, especially in a three-man backline. I would love to see de Jong play the free role in that defense.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
I mean, that would make sense, too, if another midfielder is that final addition, if you will, aside from Memphis Depay, who's not been announced yet. Yeah, interesting. I mean, could one of those center backs be, and this is tongue-in-cheek, of course, but Richard asks, Slightly on a tangent, but does Sergio Ramos leaving Madrid help or hinder Barca's chances heading into next season's Clásicos? Obviously, he had become a fading force of the player, but still exerted a strong influence on their mindset in games. And before you answer this, Levan, I think the one addendum I want to add, too, is that, remember, Zidane is out and Ancelotti is in. So not only is that captain voice gone, but also the manager that seemed to convince his team that every match was a final is also out of that locker room to be replaced by a voice that, you know, the likes of Marcelo have heard before, who is now the new captain, by the way.
Mm. Marcelo is the new captain. I didn't know that. That's funny.
Glad I could give you that breaking news here.
Marcelo is the new captain.
Yeah.
I think that for Madrid, Militao and Alaba is probably an upgrade on Sergio Ramos and Varane. The deal breaker there is if Varane leaves and they don't replace him, then that leaves them with very little debt. So if one of Militao or Alaba have an injury, then the drop in quality is significant. So it would really surprise me if they let Varane go. Sergio Ramos, I mean, he's 35 years old, will turn 36 over the course of the season. You know, that's the way things go. Everybody will retire at some point. Messi has been here for as long as some culés can remember, I'm sure. My memory goes back further than Messi, but even for me, like, you know, he's been here for about the last 12, 13, 14 years already. And he will also at some point leave, right? And the same with Ramos. I think maybe it will hurt them in some of the big matches, but over the course of the season, where he does not always play very well, he does not always defend very well, maybe it will help them.
Well, I think that was some of the irony, too, of Real Madrid over the last few seasons, that he and some others showed up in big matches for them when, if you watch Real Madrid week in and week out, they haven't really been a successful team. They're not a team that looks like they're going to win every match every week. And yet the likes of, I mean, again, Karim Benzema, Cristiano Ronaldo, Sergio Ramos, they would show up in the big matches when they needed to, and that would be all the difference. And then they'd get the 3 points when they needed, or they'd more likely win that Champions League match in whatever way they had to and get that over the line. And again, Zidane is the right manager for those moments. So yeah, it is interesting to see, and I'm curious to know how Real Madrid as a team, as a squad built in the way that they are, how they're going to deal with that almost difference in philosophy of now becoming more like a Barcelona where, hey, we need to be the best team every week, week in and week out, to build up to the point where we win those one-off matches. Because again, with Marcelo as your captain, you do kind of wonder, do they have the mindset? Do they have that killer instinct that's going to be required? And I mean, Benzema is still floating around too. He hasn't gone anywhere. So even though Marcelo might have in the armband this coming season, Benzema is the most important player for Real Madrid still. And if Ancelotti gets the best out of him, then, you know, they're in a good spot to contend, as they always do, for every title.
Right. The other thing is that Marcelo is not even their best left back.
No.
So most games, he's not going to be the captain because he won't be on the pitch.
Right. It'll be Modric or Cruz. I mean, guys, it've been around a long time. I mean, same thing. Casemiro will probably wear it occasionally, which is,
That will be a good captain for them.
I know. It's frustrating. Yeah. I mean, that's how I know he's good, because you say that and I go, bleh, bleh. Yeah.
I admire him for always getting away with those fouls. I don't know how he does it. Every referee knows that he fouls. But it's not just in Spain where you can say, okay, there's some Madrid bias because of most of the referees being from, let's say, Spain. Mm-hmm. And outside of Catalonia, in a lot of regions, Madrid is by far the more popular of the two teams. And he still gets away with it. But also in Europe, where you would say, well, how come he's still on the pitch? How come referees forgive him? How come this guy of all guys gets the benefit of the doubt? Because we know that referees study players. They study players. They study their mannerisms. They study the way they play, the fouls they make. They study whether they dive a lot or not. How is it possible that Casemiro always gets away with his fouls? It's incredible. It's an art.
Well, I think Bordalas kind of answered this in a press conference, was it a year or two ago? And in the NBA, I've been watching the playoffs and watching PJ Tucker on Kevin Durant, I think it's the same answer here, that they, in the first 5 minutes of the match, they set a precedent that can exist throughout that match, where every match is officiated, every game in the NBA is officiated differently. So if PJ Tucker comes out and that ref doesn't call that initial foul and immediately put him in foul trouble with two quick fouls on for his physicality, then that sets the precedent for what is allowed in that particular game. And Casemiro, every match you watch between the first 2 to 7 minutes of that match, he sets a precedent of the physicality of how that match is going to go. And it might not even be him. It might be set by Militao. It might be set by somebody that even gets a yellow card. But a ref is uncomfortable to give a yellow card out in the first 2 to 5 minutes. But once that precedent is sent, whether the yellow card is out, now you've got a wild game on your hands, good luck to you, referee, or by not giving it out, it's told you what's okay in that match. And Casemiro is absolutely correct, one of the best in the world at dictating how the referee now has to be almost in competition with himself on how he's going to judge that match. And again, in the NBA, the smart defenders, the ones who, is it a little dirty? Yeah. Is it too physical? Yes. And I think Barcelona not really having a player that does that, I think is, I mean, for better or worse, that Barca don't really have a player that necessarily leans into what you call the dark arts. I mean, Arturo Vidal used to do it. That's a player that did it. He did it for Chile. I mean, I don't know how much he did it for Barca, but you watch his time at Bayern Munich, he did it. You watch him with Juventus, he did it. I mean, Chile in particular. I mean, I know you were watching Copa America, but Argentina-Chile, I mean, Arturo Vidal in the first 5 minutes, he took out Rodrigo De Paul, and he's like, okay, so this is the match that this is going to be. We know each other. We don't need the referee. We're going to just play this match regardless of what the referee thinks about this.
Yeah, but South Americans just play the game in a different way.
I know.
So what is a foul in Europe in South America is looked at differently. And it's the same when I play football with European people or South American people. The intensity is just different. What I will say about Arturo Vidal is at least in his time in Barca, he did not foul that much.
No. Yeah, his reputation preceded him. I agree.
No. And he goes for the ball and he gets the ball and sends the opponent flying. But he does not, like, he goes for the ball. He does not go for the kneecap. Now, when he plays for Chile, he might go for the kneecap. But in Europe, he didn't foul that much. He's just extremely, extremely physical. Carles Puyol was the same way. Like, he was an extremely tough player, extremely strong in the one-on-one duels, but he almost never fouled. Are you going to feel that Puyol takes the ball from you? Definitely. But it's never dirty. It's never a foul. I think Casemiro is sneaky. His fouls are never meant to really injure somebody.
Mm-hmm.
They're meant to hurt. And he always does it very smartly and very sneakily, but he doesn't like go out to finish somebody's career. Whereas Ramos, for example.
We're giving him too much time. I mean, I would say the inverse of that is for Barcelona in what we've seen from Luis Suarez and Neymar through those years, that they do the inverse. Like, they set the precedent that, hey, you got to call this. And if you're not going to call, you know what I mean? If I'm going to fall down the first 10 minutes and you didn't call it, well, I mean, now I know that it's something that I'm going to have to keep looking for. Or if they're calling a cheap foul on Neymar, hey, I'm going to get that foul. You know what I mean? Now you've got to make sure as those fouls escalate, you're going to call every single one of those. So, yeah, I think, yeah, we've done enough on this. So going from Copa America to back to the Euros, Vilmos asks, and we've been breaking it down, Emil and I, we talked about Spain, Argentina. We'll keep an eye on Spain, keep an eye on Argentina, keep an eye on the Barca players throughout this, for sure. But Vilmos asks, which team are you supporting at the Euros? So, Levan, yeah, let's get to know you a little bit. Now, I know the answer to this, but our listeners don't.
Okay, so I'm Dutch. I lived in Holland until I was 14, before I went to the States. Then I went back to Holland for a while. And then when I was 20, I left again. But I'm not Dutch. Like, my personality, I have some Dutch things, but I don't speak Dutch as well as people in Holland. I'm not really attached to Dutch food mostly. I don't watch Dutch television. I don't follow Dutch politics. You ask me who the president is. There are years that I don't even know. I don't read Dutch newspapers, but I do support Holland when we play football at the tournaments. I don't follow the qualification football because European qualification football is just, it's pointless. Why would I watch that? But during the Euros or during the World Cup, I root for Holland.
Yeah, so that was expected. So that's who you're looking at. And of course, little fun Holland fact for you, related to Frankie de Jong. He is the player, at least through the first match day, I know we're into match day 2 now, but he is the player to complete the most dribbles in the tournament with 5. in that one. And just this morning, Alexander Isak, I think he beat that in just one match. He had five on it, or four or whatever. Or no, it was six. Yeah, six successful dribbles. Six of six in that match did Isak. But again, that's another one of those archaic stats that who knows anything about that. And then also in the first match day, this is no surprise as well, with Spain controlling so much of the ball in that first half in particular, Pedri is the only midfielder to register more progressive ball carries than De Jong. So those were the top two in the first match day. De Jong had 24 and Pedri had 32 progressive ball carries. That is a wild number for an 18-year-old being the youngest Spain player to debut at the Euros. So Pedri continues to just be special. That's all he is. He's special in a lot of different ways. But which team am I supporting, to answer your question quickly, Vilmos, is, I mean, I'm just basically following the Barca players and I'm enjoying watching things and the storylines. It's good for me because, again, I'm not European, I'm American. So while I have some German origin, I have some English origin, some Irish origin, some Scottish origin, my wife has some Spanish origin. So it's, you know, there's a lot of different teams that I'm watching and enjoying. And then the stories, like, again, Scotland making it after all this time and just hoping they score their first tournament goal as we record this with England and Scotland in the background. So, yeah, I mean, I follow the storylines and I just want to see exciting things happen. I mean, even those moments and live and die with the tournaments without having a rooting interest. I think I get to enjoy things like that. So I'm not really supporting anyone. I mean, I always hope Spain does well. And I always hope, you know, with Cristiano Ronaldo at Portugal, I go, I don't know about that. You know, it's one of the only places that I don't have origins in. And same thing for France. I mean, they're so talented. I just want to see it work out well. And yeah, so that's it. Let's shift gears into some more serious content. We're going to talk about forwards now. We've got a bunch of questions about the forward line. Eric asks, what do we think we should do in regards to the attacking players? Griezmann, Dubai, Fati, Messi, Aguero, Trincao, Dembele, Brathwaite. Seems like too many players to him. And Eric, I think we agree. That seems like a lot of players. So who would you offload, assuming Memphis is coming in? And that also depends on whether or not there's two in the front or most likely there's going to be three up top.
I think Brathwaite is out because I think he will actually leave. He will be convinced. Because he just seems like a thoroughly decent person. And if you tell a decent person that you're not going to play, with his mindset of having a couple of years football left, he would probably want to go somewhere where he can play and he'll be grateful for the very unexpected two seasons that he had at Barcelona. Griezmann is not going anywhere. The amount of money on his contract is absurdly high, so there'll be very little takers, and there's still a huge amount of amortization on his deal for the next three seasons. Also, his wife is Spanish. How many kids does he have? A couple, I think, yeah. Who are growing up here, so he's not going to want to leave Spain.
Yeah, explain that to our listeners before you go too far off about the contract, about the amortization.
Okay, so we paid $125 million. For Griezmann. But when a club signs a player, they don't necessarily, like, there's the cash flow, the money that they pay, and there's the accounting. Accounting-wise, that $125 million is spread out over the years of his contract. So what that means is that a player will cost $25 million per year, plus his salary, plus his agent fees, I guess, spread out over the 5 years of his contract. This also means that if we sell Griezmann after 2 years, we will have, accounting-wise, paid $25 million for his first year, $25 million for his second year. We sell him. The $75 million that is left of that $125 million transfer fee is going to count as a loss on our books. So that means that we need to sell him for $75 million just to offset the loss. It's probably easier when you see it on paper than when I explain it.
No. It makes sense that there's the cost that... I mean, it's the same principle that we applied to the Artur Pjanic swap deal as to why that was such a benefit to Barcelona to get rid of Artur, because they were able to bring in that transfer money up front. And as we, you know, this is an oversimplification of it, but that Pjanic's deal is over multiple years. So if they're able to get X number back on the back end of that contract, so now they don't have to resell him for $70 million. They just have to sell him for what he's worth over the course of the 3 years that, or 4 years that are left on his deal. So yeah, I mean, exactly. That makes sense to me. So yeah, that was an explanation on Griezmann and Barcelona. I mean, Levan has hit it on the head that he's just too expensive is Griezmann. And with the economics that are currently going on in the transfer market, PSG and Man City are the only two clubs that could afford him, and they are not purchasing him. So you know that Griezmann is going nowhere.
Yeah. Nor would he want to go to those places.
Right.
So that's a problem. And the club would need to pay us 75 million and be willing to take on his salary, which is a huge amount for a player who's already 30 years old. So even if they say, okay, well, let's pay 25 million, we get rid of his salary, it would probably be worth it for us if we can accept the 50 million loss on the books. But still, Griezmann probably will not want to leave. Mm-hmm. What I do think, however, is that if Koeman wants a midfielder who makes runs into the box, who can pass and combine the ball, and who will be an excellent defender, then he already has that in Griezmann.
Yeah.
Especially if he played a 3-5-2, because our 3-5-2 worked best when we had Frankie de Jong in the back line, and when we had Griezmann playing behind Messi and Dembele. So I think that could be a solution for Griezmann. Then who do we have left? Dembele. Will he stay? Will he go? We just don't know. I would want to renew him because he, even though he's inconsistent, he's got so much talent. And also for very selfish reasons, when I go to the stadium, I love to see players like Dembele. I know he doesn't always play well. I know he can be frustrating. But in today's football, where everything is so robotic mm-hmm. and everybody always does what they're supposed to do, Dembele is just so much more fun than 99% of the other players out there. So for a very selfish reason, as a spectator, I like to have a player like that on our team. Depay is signing very smartly for 2 seasons, which kind of... No, I would like to sign him for 5 seasons because part of my reasons for wanting to sign him is, hey, if it doesn't work out, we can sell him after 2 seasons. I guess that's not going to happen. So smart move on his part. But he will probably improve our squad, even though, like we saw yesterday, he does not always play very well. When he's on, he's on. But when he's off, oh boy, he's off. The biggest factor is Ansu Fati.
Yeah, that's where I was going to go with this. That Terashuk asked, how can you play Griezmann and Depay in the same starting 11? And Levan, if it's Griezmann in the midfield, I think you deserve a lot of credit. I mean, I don't know how much Barca listens to our podcast, but I can say that Griezmann as a midfielder has been a Levan idea that I think would also, again, support that notion that we saw that Dembele was kind of forced to play a false nine at times this year. And now imagine Memphis Depay in that position, a player who's much more comfortable taking on that role alongside Messi. So that is, I think, the only way that Depay, Messi, and Griezmann will work together. All that said, I think you almost kind of throw part of that out the window because, yes, Dembele's contract, I think, seems to be the domino effect on whether or not, I mean, Trincao sounds like he's not going to be sold, though he very well is probably going to be loaned out. Just because for his development, it doesn't make any sense. As a player and also to have him even in the squad, it doesn't make any sense to put a 21-year-old across 30, 35 million euros, have him sit on the bench for a whole year. It doesn't make any sense. And then Aguero is also floating out there, but we've talked about him in the past. We talked about the expectations for him. And I think his role for Argentina is actually very similar to what he's going to be doing for Barca. That's just who he is now at this age. But yes, the Fati health is the other big question. I said on Monday's show, if Fati is 100%, I'm starting Fati over Depay 10 out of 10 times, if Fati is 100%. But is Fati 100%? We got a lot of questions on what's the progress. It seems like he will be healthy for the season. He will most likely take it slow in preseason. It's going to take a little while to get up to 10th gear or whatever it takes him to get back. It's in today's day and age, it is not crazy to think that a player that young is going to be able to come back to be 98% of what he was. That's not a crazy notion. I mean, again, to go to the NBA, I mean, Kevin Durant played 48 minutes 2 nights ago, 48, the entire game when he tore his Achilles even a year ago, right? And you remember the Pistons, Isaiah Thomas, when he rolled his ankle, he was never the same. And that was just a sprained ankle, an extremely terrible sprained ankle. And that ruined his career in was it 1990 or 1991 when that happened? And now Kevin Durant at the age of 31 tears his Achilles, which ends careers. And he's 7 feet tall, and he comes back and he's able to play 48 minutes. I mean, he's also superhuman, so not every player is like that. But Fati seems to have, I mean, to be able to debut and do what he did at 16, there are things going on in his body that are not going on in my body or Levon's body or most likely our listeners' body. He is a different level athlete. So I think of all these, I mean, so many of the players that I think that if Busquets had that same injury at 18, I'm not sure if he gets back to be 99% of what he was. Just because of, again, like, what he's made up as an, you know, he's very durable as an athlete. He does a lot of different things, but he just doesn't have that, the ability that Fati had even to recover from, would you know that he had a broken leg, what was it, 3 years ago when he was in the academy? Yeah. No, because he's recovered completely and fully from that. So yes, Fati's health, a major question. And I think that dictates where everyone else on that forward line goes. I mean, even if Fati's 100%, Dembele might be looking around in January, depending on how much Koeman is playing Depay and what that starting lineup was. Dembele might just think, hey, I'm not gonna go along with my contract, but if you want to sell me now in January, or sell me next summer so you get something for me, or else I'm just going to leave on a free transfer.
Well, I think that Dembele, they'll tell him this summer, hey, either you go or you spend the whole year in the stands. Mm-hmm. I think we actually have a president who has the heart or the strength to do this. I was going to say another body part, but...
Fortitude is the word.
fortitude, very nice. So... I also think, however, that if Dembele renews, that besides Messi, if you want to play Messi as a false nine, which you might want to do just so that, you know, our defense, we can cover for him on defense, then we don't have anybody who is as good as Dembele on the right. Depay does not play on the right. He can play starting from the left, or you can play him as a nine. On the right, he's not that comfortable. I suppose you can put Griezmann on the right. But if you put Griezmann on the right, he's just going to make a lot of the same movements that Messi already makes. So that's not going to combine very well. You're not going to play Fati on the right. You're going to play Fati on the left or as a nine. Aguero, for the times that he comes on, he'll be a nine. Trincao, probably not going to stay because we also have Coyao. Mm-hmm. And Coyao plays best on the right, but Dembele is still a lot better than Coyao at this time. So we'll see. I think another thing that you can do is say you can play Messi behind Griezmann and Depay, for example. Or you can play Messi on the right and Depay on the left, Griezmann in the middle, and have especially Depay and Griezmann, they can change positions a lot because both of them like to drop back, but both of them also make vertical runs. So I think they can create interesting movements together when they play together. There's just a whole lot of combinations possible. And I hope that Koeman rotates a lot as well, because I'm a fan of rotation.
Yeah, I mean, I think the final big question, I mean, I feel like after 265 episodes, one of the themes is that we tend to talk about Messi last. We bring up Messi last because he just seems like this inevitable thing that exists, right? That he's just going to always be starting. He's going to play 90 minutes, et cetera, et cetera. And he's always going to be there, as you said with the answer to the first question. And it's very likely, and we're expecting him to be there next season. But as far as even Dembele, what happens if you sell Dembele in January next summer and then Messi's gone anyway, and now you're left with Griezmann? And, I mean, God forbid, Fati isn't 100%, right? So now you've got 60% of Fati, no Messi, Griezmann, Depay for one more year. You just sold Dembele, and now Messi's gone, right? And then Aguero has one more year left, and we'll see what, right? So it's very, very easily you could descend into this apocalyptic, you know, cataclysm of forwards very, very quickly. But, again, there's still plenty of time, and a lot will change till then. So,
right, and just to add to that, what we also see a lot, once players are 34, 35, 36, all of a sudden, they are injured for half of the season.
Yeah.
Sergio Ramos is a very good example of this.
Piqué, last year.
Yeah, Piqué. Puyol. Well, Puyol has like an injury map that is pretty populated.
Yeah.
But there is also that risk where, you know, Messi will be 34. And the season after that, 35, even if he renews, is not guaranteed that we're actually going to see him for two full seasons.
So on the Fati point, Alex did ask, on a scale of 1 to 10, what's the concern level with Fati being the same player again? I say the concern level is, I mean, I still go with like a 7 out of 10 that I'm concerned that he'll never be the same player again. It's just, it's a difficult injury that even with modern science, but Fati was so good that even 70% of what Fati was is still a player good enough to play for FC Barcelona and play anywhere in the world. So my concern level is 7, that he'll be the same player, but what's my concern that he'll ever be able to come back and be a contributor at FC Barcelona? My concern level is a 2, because I do trust that he's going to be able to contribute down the road.
7-11.
Your concern level is 11, that he'll never be the same player again.
My concern level is 11, that he will never have a career.
Wow.
At a top club. At that age, he already came back from a broken leg when he was 15, I believe. And now this knee injury that, according to which report is true, either required 3 or 4 surgeries. And there are reports that the nature of that injury is very similar to Umtiti's knee injury, where it's something that, you know, that just really impacted Umtiti a lot and destroyed his career. So my concern level is extremely high, and yeah, it's depressing.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think something maybe also still depressing, but George asked, do you think we will be able to sell the likes of Brathwaite? He said Griezmann, but we've already answered that. But Brathwaite, Lenglet, Umtiti, Coutinho, we know what the list is. Junior Firpo, you know what the list is. But how likely do you think, even Pjanic, how likely do you think those sales are going to happen? I mean, my answer on previous shows has been that take the list of players that the club has kind of said that they want to get rid of, and cut that list in half, right? Because they're going to probably be able to sell 3 to 4, if things get lucky with the market, then maybe 5 players. But the list is what, 8 or 9? They're never going to sell the 9 players that you expect them to sell. But I mean, you kind of almost have to pick and choose which ones they're going to be.
You know, my liquor cabinet is right there, right? So maybe we should stop the podcast and I just start drinking. So the latest rumor regarding Pjanic is that we are going to send him back on loan to Juventus and we will pay part of his salary. So that's how bad this is looking. I think we will be able to sell Braithwaite. We're not going to get money for him, but we can offload him maybe for a nominal fee. I think we can sell Junior Firpo, even though, from what I understand, teams are just trying to get him on loan. The same for Alinha. We'll probably be able to sell him for 10 million. I think he's very talented. And had we had maybe Koeman 3 years ago instead of Valverde, he would have gotten a chance. But his chance is gone because he had several loans now. He's getting older. He just needs to go somewhere and play. We have other young players coming through. We could sell Puig. We could sell Elias. Those players have a strong market. We could sell Dest, Emerson, Araujo.
You keep naming players I don't want to sell.
We could sell Ansu Fati.
I know what you're doing, Levan.
All the players that we do not want to sell,
yeah,
are players that we could sell. All the players that we want to sell are players that we cannot sell for the same reason that we want to sell them. They're too expensive. They have too high salary and they're not good enough for the salary that they're earning. So would you buy that? Would you sign Umtiti and pay too much? No, you wouldn't.
Yeah, I mean, you need desperation. And in this market, it's hard to think that, I mean, there are clubs desperate for talent, but how many clubs are desperate with deep pockets? The answer is zero. There are no clubs who have the kind of money to spend on Umtiti. Because yeah, you'd say, oh, it'd be great for him to go back to Ligue 1. But look at the center back pairings of every team in Ligue 1. Most likely for what, 70% of the teams in that first division in France, you have at least one of the two center backs is 19 to 22 years old and is likely going to be sold or bought by Arsenal or Brighton and Hove or whoever it may be, right? Or Borussia Dortmund or whoever, you know, someone's going to come calling for 70% of those 19 to 22-year-old French center backs because there's just, so to think that Umtiti's going to be able to just return home because Lyon is desperate for him. No, Lyon have like 3 or 4 center backs under the age of 25 who are a third of the price. So, right? So there's no homecoming. There's no magical box to put them back in. And yeah, you're right. I think you upset enough of our listeners, Levan, about the names that you threw out there to sell. But that's true. It's a true statement. I think you got your point across that even Trincao, as we said, Trincao might be, I think he might be the player that Barcelona are willing to get rid of that has the most market value at the moment. I think he might actually be that one player that fits both those categories.
Yeah, exactly. And especially if we are talking trade, I think if we see a player that that can add to our squad and make our squad stronger, then Trincao is the kind of young, talented player that would interest another club to take on in a trade.
So we got two quick questions more as we wind this one down. Khaled asks, do you think Xavi needs to take on Barca B or a bigger team in Europe before becoming the Barcelona coach?
Preferably, yes, of course. Right now, he's in an environment where he's not challenged. He is basically teaching a team of players what he knows instead of going somewhere to learn what he doesn't know yet. His assistant manager is his brother, for crying out loud. I would even say that ideally, he does not just go to Barca B. He also goes to other countries that actually have a stronger football culture for him to learn from. People point at Pep and say, well, Pep only went to Barca B. But no. Pep actually left Barcelona. Then he went to Italy. He went to Mexico. Mm-hmm. He also went to Qatar for a season, I think. So Pep actually went on this odyssey where he learned about football from another source than Barcelona. Xavi has drunk from the Barcelona source his whole life, from the Barcelona fountain, and now he goes out and he shares what he has learned. I would like for him, for his ideas, to be challenged before he comes back to Barcelona. And of course, we all know that his football mind is incredible. And he will coach the Barca way. And I'm not saying that, you know, if he comes here straight from Qatar, that he's going to fail. But if you ask me between Xavi coming straight back to Barcelona or Xavi taking a couple of years to actually become a better coach before coming to Barcelona, I would take that second option, both for us and for him.
Yeah, a reminder that he is just 3 years out of being a professional. So it's not like he's... There's time. There's time for him to be the best coach he can be, because a lot of times you do see managers make that mistake. I mean, I feel like we're watching with Andre Pirlo at Juventus at the moment, that Pirlo was probably going to be a top manager because he has a top football mind. But he jumped right into that job, and you wonder, was that a little too soon? And then what happens to Pirlo? Because then after you fail at your dream job at the age of, what is it, 39 or 40 or 41, 42, now you make that odyssey, and then it takes you a long, long time, Ancelotti, to get back. I mean, look at Ancelotti. Mm-hmm. How long? Look at all the bad stops he had as he began to be a manager, and now look at the refined and well-respected manager that he is after, was it? Now he's 3.5 decades or whatever it is that he's that he's had good stops and bad stops, but he gets a Real Madrid job because he's proven that he can have those kind of jobs, but he's now a fully formed version of himself. And he's learned all the things that he needed to learn with those lessons along the way. So, exactly.
Clarence Seedorf is another example, because he was playing in Brazil. He was very happy to play in Brazil. I thought that was a beautiful move for somebody to go from Milan to say, you know what, I'm going to try a different football culture where I'm not going to make as much money, but I'm just going to live this experience. He went to play for Botafogo. If you look at his highlights in Botafogo at 36 years old, he looked like Maradona with the goals that he scored. But then midway through the season, Milan said, well, hey, we need a coach. Come and coach us. And for Seedorf, that was his dream club, dream job, because he played at Milan for so long. He goes to Milan, fails horribly. Mm-hmm. And now he's lucky if he can get a job coaching in Segunda B.
Yeah, I mean, we saw him now bounce around, I think, in the second division of the Netherlands, even, where he was in the first division. Yeah. It was a PSV, I think, he had that job and lost that job. But yeah, so interesting about the coaching journey. And yeah, I mean, Pep's story, as always, is the one that people look to as the most successful one. It's the beacon of how you're supposed to do things. And there are definitely different roads to take. It doesn't always, to be a great manager, you don't have to just follow what Pep Guardiola did to be a great manager at Barcelona. That's not how it works. And as football changes and as the game tactics change along with it. So the way that Pep learned may not be the right way for Xavi to learn. Even watching the Euro, I was thinking, watching Italy, that you and I were going back and forth about on WhatsApp, that we got in our head, because I think you and I started watching football. I mean, you started earlier than me, but as I'm watching Serie A in the 90s, or as I'm watching the great Italian teams, I mean, doing well in European in competitions or in the World Cup in the 1990s, that's what Serie A football was, right? Serie A football is Paolo Maldini and shut everything down, and it's tough, and it's going to be defensive. And that's what Italian football is. And the idea of what Italian football was has persisted now for almost 30 years. But you look at how the way Italy plays now And then you look at some of the most successful teams in Italy, Atalanta, Napoli, AC Milan, even Juventus. They're not playing the way that we thought they were anymore. And now watching the Italian national team be the culmination of the fact that Serie A and Italy aren't what you think it is. Is it the same level as the Premier League? No, they're different. Is it the same thing as La Liga? No, they're different. And the ideas that we have, like there are maybe baseline generalizations we can make about La Liga where do those teams play the ball better than the Premier League? Yeah, they do. I mean, it's just across the, and it's not for everybody, Hadafe, but across the spectrum, La Liga teams are expected to play the ball and want the ball more than a team like from the Bundesliga who are willing to just sit back and gegenpress, which became the hot thing to do after Jurgen Klopp. And Bayern Munich does it better than any other team in the world. They high press. So, yeah, I think we just need to, even when talking about Xavi and coaching, we need to deconstruct what we think that football tactics are and what we think that going to a certain place means for your footballing philosophy. Italy is not, you can learn a lot of things in Italy, not just how to be defensive like Paolo Maldini. And I think I just want people to just explore a little bit beyond what they know and what is entrenched in what they believe football to be in certain places.
Exactly. And another point is it's okay if he goes to Italy or if he goes to Germany or if he goes, takes another club in Spain. It's okay if he goes there and fails. Barcelona is still going to take him.
That's true.
You know, Luis Enrique failed terribly at Roma. And then he came to Barcelona and won the treble.
And do you remember the press release? I remember the press release that they talked nothing of Roma. Everything was about his experience with Celta de Vigo. Everything was about how he succeeded with Celta de Vigo. And it was, oh, but Roma also happened. He also went there. But now he comes from Barcelona after being so successful in the Liga with Celta de Vigo.
Of course.
Yeah, great.
But this is even like if today you look at sports and Mundo Deportivo, everything is about how Depay led Haaland with a goal and a pre-assist. But if you watched the game yesterday, I don't know if you did.
Yep. For our listeners, his hands are over his face.
He was terrible. he was terrible. And then if I browse the web and I check the Catalan dailies, he was the man of the match. He was brilliant. He's the star of the show. So yeah, news here is not necessarily news. It's more special interest.
Well, speaking of making news, last question. This is going to have to be a sentence. Unfortunately, we could probably have this be the main topic of a whole show. But Nicholas asked, very recently, the first 100 days of Laporta's new term had passed. What do you think of this first crucial period of his? I guess the better way to ask this question, for time's sake, would be, Levon, what is the one thing that has stuck out, either good or bad, from his first 100 days from you? In the U.S., you do the same thing. There's this landmark thing about the U.S. president. Their 100 days, the promises they made in 100 days. So what do you think of Laporta and the promises he made and what he was able to do in his first 100 days?
Not so much what he did, but what stands out is just the general optimism around the club. That has changed a lot since Laporta took over, and that is very nice. What he did, however, he changed some club rule so that he could give a job to his sister. He signed a 33-year-old striker who never played well with Messi, even when they were both in their prime. He signed a player who we were going to get anyway, regardless of who would have won the elections. So what he did has not terribly impressed me, but the sensations, the feeling that we have are positive. So let's hope that we carry that positivity forward. And, you know, there's such a long road ahead because the club is such a mess, which is mm-hmm. Bartomeu's fault. But it's a bigger mess than the one that Laporta inherited from Gaspar. And already that was an incredible mess. So let's see what happens. But hey, you have to be positive. You have to be optimistic.
Yeah, I think, you know, I'm not going to go into a different direction for time's sake. What I will add is that for someone who studies history and politics, you can't underestimate charisma and cult of personality and those type of things, not only when it comes to politics and winning elections, but when it comes to the financial success of those regimes, if you will. So I do want to say that I continue to be, and this is again not just because I work for the club sometimes with Twitch, but I continue to be optimistic. And even the decisions that made me vehemently disgusted, as I said at the start of this last on Monday, that you know, it was my birthday and I woke up to Garcia Pimienta news and my wife said, all right, enough Twitter for the day, because she watched my face. I was awake for 5 minutes. And then, you know, my wife comes in and says, hey, it's milestone birthday. Happy birthday. And then my face is, oh, Garcia Pimienta is gone and I feel sad. And so even with that news, the way I ingested it differently now with Laporta that I would have last time is that now restructuring all of the academy. For better or worse. But what that means is now I have to make sure that I give this regime 6 to 8 months to a year to two to figure out what the game plan is. Because there were definitely issues with the academy under Bartomeu's regime. And Garcia Pimienta, for me, was one of the positives that stood out in what was a negative time and a turbulent time. So if you're going to get rid of Garcia Pimienta, that means that there's some big ideas going on. There's something that has to be going on, and it wasn't just some quick throwaway thing. That said, 2-3 years from now, I'd like to revisit it. And yeah, the optimism, I think, is going to last for a little bit of time so that I can just give this an opportunity. And I think, again, that's what 100 days, that's what a new regime means.
But also the way that he left. So by all accounts, just 2 weeks before, he was involved and part of the plans, and he was told that he would continue. And then all of a sudden he gets just a phone call saying, hey, that's it. You're fired today. For somebody who has been at the club for 19 years, mm-hmm. that's not the way that I expect Laporta to handle things. That is very much how I expect Bartomeu to handle things.
Right.
Because we all know that the way that Bartomeu handled players or staff, he was too much of a coward to actually sit down with them and tell them good or bad news. He didn't have any charisma. That's why he ended up paying all these horrible salaries, because that's the only way that he could convince people. Whereas I would have expected from Laporta, if he lets Pimienta go, which I do not agree with, which nobody agrees with, to do so in a better way.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the place we leave it. There's still, with this offseason, just like with the first team, there's still plenty to be fleshed out. We didn't even have time to get to the Luis Cortez and Barça Femení news. I think there's more to that story to come out. The one little thing I'll say, as I do this intro, I mean, the outro, as we end the show, is that, the players seem to be burnt out from, I talked about for a long time, the intensity in training that it took to win the treble, to make the jump up from a team that got absolutely lambasted in 2019 by Lyon, and to become a team that was worthy of the treble and to win and to take on all takers and to dominate all sides in the way that they did this season. That takes a lot out of players. That takes a lot physically, mentally, emotionally. It doesn't mean Luis Cortez is out. He might be out by the time you have this in your ears, but it just sounds like both sides, that being the players and the manager, want to reevaluate how they run things. And a lot of the times winning does that. And that's where I'll leave it. So Levon, I think your first La Ronda, I think you handled it just fine. I think I have no more. My only question for you, my final listener question, is how do you think you did in your first La Ronda?
What, we already finished?
Yeah, so that means, listeners, that Levon, I think we're ready to do this again sometime soon. So keep thinking over the next few weeks and months about what those questions be. We're going to be talking about the expectations for the new season and all that stuff in coming weeks as we get ready. Now we're less than a month before preseason. So I know the last season just ended, but there's a new one coming. And until then, though, we want to thank you for listening to another edition of the Barcelona Podcast. Reminder, these came from our closed Facebook group, the Barcelona Podcast. Just answer the questions. We'll let you in the group so you can ask these questions here. We're on Twitter and Instagram at the Barcelona Pod. You also find him at Barcelev. I mean, hard to miss on Barcelona Twitter. An important member of the community is Levon, of course. And then we have a Patreon. It helps us make these shows. Always, always appreciate it. You can also listen to these shows without the ads over there, and also a little financial incentive to support the show. Yeah, we did hear, I did have some feedback that there's some audio issues of late recently. Yes, because I'm trying to figure out what equipment is broken without buying all new equipment. But again, helping us out on Patreon is helpful to me in case I do need to buy new equipment, that it doesn't feel so bad to do that. And then we're also on YouTube with the match reviews, some other specialty content over there at the Barcelona Podcast. Most importantly, thanks so much for listening to the Barcelona Podcast. Until next time, we'll talk to you soon, and Forza Barça.
Visca la Barça.